Welcome to the Minimum Effective Dose Podcast, where we discuss the art, science, and application of high-performance strength and conditioning. Join Mike Perry and Brett Jones as they share invaluable experiences veteran strength coaches, lecturers, and educators. Welcome to Season 4 of the Minimum Effective Dose Podcast. And we are back with the Minimum Effective Dose Podcast. Brett, we got a good one today. We are talking about sets and reps and Prolipin's chart.
Prolipin, or however you pronounce Russian names. We don't mean any offense by mispronouncing it.
No,
because I'm sure we both did not hit the mark on...
No. But it sounds like a medicine. Like if you have a headache and tension in your neck, you need Prolipin.
Yeah, I think that we could end up with quite the product to market there. But I think we've been pretty philosophical over the last few episodes and, you know, diving back into some practical, you know, recommendations from a programming standpoint. And this is the unplanned portion of the podcast because we actually did prepare for this podcast, which I don't know how this is going to go.
That's the problem. It's probably going to suck. We'll probably have to start over.
But at the end, I do want to talk a little more RPE because I think it does kind of tie in. And I think some people make some pretty big mistakes as far as RPE is concerned. But, you know, when I, early days, one of the early presentations I put together was Strength for Success. And we're going back into the very early 2000s, probably circa 2005. I had put together this presentation on strength for success. And one part of it was Prolipin's chart. It's a classic. It's been out there for a long time. Couple of caveats when we talk about Prolipin's chart. Not set in stone. These are kind of general recommendations.
Ranges.
The original information that Prolipin's chart was developed off of were elite Russian Olympic weightlifters. And so these percentages and rep ranges were a little more specific to elite athletes using the Olympic lifts in their training. So when we take it and we apply it to other things, we are coloring outside the box just a little bit. But I think the principles and the ranges and guidelines are still super instructive and very helpful for monitoring and understanding rep ranges and intensity zones. And I just a couple caveats to throw out there right off the bat to say we're giving you a general guideline. This is not set in stone.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And for those of you that are probably wondering what we're talking about, if you need something to look at, like go to Google and just search for Prolipin's chart, and you can sort of have that as a visual aid in front of you so you can understand what we're talking about. But I will say this chart, like Brett said, it was from experienced individuals. Like you're not going to have a brand new client come through the door, test their percentages and use this. Like that's just a really bad idea. So, you know, I would argue that unless you're working with an athlete, you should have been lifting consistently for a year, in my opinion, before you start really hammering stuff like these percentages, because I just think you need time, an exposure to the bar or to the dumbbell or whatever. I mean, yes, you can obviously hit percentages earlier, but there's something to be said for just spending a lot of time lifting and refining your technique, because those percentages, as you get stronger, are going to change anyways. So don't get married to the percentages, right? And, you know, make sure that for brand new individuals, this is not what we'd recommend. Now, we can take some of these ideas and find some ways to apply the principles of progressive overload, and that can allow us to be formatted with Gen Pop, but generally speaking, you know, utilizing this idea of starting with a higher set and rep scheme, and as that set and rep scheme drops lower and lower and lower, the weights we lift get higher and higher and higher. It's basically your basic X pattern, if you will. So that's Prolipin's chart in a nutshell. But let me ask you this, Brett. When did you find that using percentages really impacted what you did? Because you've used and implemented so many different types of training styles, regimens. When did percentage-based stuff sort of hit you?
Really with powerlifting. Outside of trying to actually, run a cycle to peak my squat, or got in the awful situations of trying to peak all three lifts at the same time. That's when your percentages really start to kick in and really start to matter. And then once you're dealing with more of a true 1RM, now your percentages start to matter. But there's an individual uniqueness to where those percentages kick in. I was always able to operate at a pretty high level, meaning close to my 1RM. I'll use pull-ups for an example. When I was at my peak with pull-ups, I could do one or two reps at 105, the beast. I could do a couple reps around 100 to 106 pounds in the pull-up. But I could do 10 to 12, 10 or 11 at the 32 kilo. So I was actually operating at a really high percentage of my 1RM, but able to accrue a lot of volume. So within that, I was probably blowing out what most people would consider to be like the 80 or 85% 1RM numbers that I should be seeing, quotation marks, should be seeing at that load. Even within some of Fabio's programming, there's now a reload. You test your 80% 1RM and you see how many reps you can get at your 80% 1RM, because the charts will tell you X. Well, you might be at Y or Q. So you might be somebody that can only get 4 or 5 reps at your 80% 1RM. You might be somebody that can get 12 reps at your 80% 1RM. Well, now what you do with your percentages and how you progress that person have to adjust to the idea that how they're operating at those percentages changes. So the general guidelines are great, but then have to be adapted to the individual.
It's funny you say that, because I was just going to bring that up and I forget what the study was. And it was, someone shared it not too long ago, but it was regarding that. It's like, hey, you know, what's your 3RM? And they hit it for like 7, and another person hit it for like 12, and then another person hit it for 2. So it's, I'm not saying it doesn't matter, but it's not biblical, right? It's not written in stone. It's not, you know, it's going to change. And I think that is important as a coach to understand. We want to write the perfect program, right? With the perfect jumps and the perfect stress adaptation compensation. But I would argue that when you write that linear program for 12 weeks, whatever it is, there are going to be some times throughout that 12 weeks that you're going to have to back off, recast, reload, whatever you have to do. But that is just honestly paying attention along the way, right? Because, I mean, I've done this before. I've written myself a program and my starting point was not aggressive enough. So the first 2 weeks were like basically practice, right? There wasn't enough stress to necessarily have a neurological adaptation. Now, did I get some skill? Yeah, but I wouldn't have even considered that as part of the program because it didn't really move the needle. So, and that's why I think it's important to understand the basics of like linear periodization and starting points, and knowing how to implement, whether it's percentages, whether it's repetitions in reserve, or whether it's, you know, perceived rate of exertion, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. So, but the percentages make a difference, because really what this chart does is it gives you a starting point for sets and reps. And is it perfect? No, but it's a starting point. And I love the fact that it's written in a very, very simple way. And if you look at the chart, you're going to see that there's sort of 4 columns, if you will. And there's the 55 to 65% column, 70 to 80, 80 to 90, and 90 plus. Now, the first thing I want you to really consider is that the meat and potatoes of the progress is going to be those two in the middle, the 70 to 80 and the 80 to 90%. That is where the majority of the work is going to be done. Brett, you have a great line, and you talk about, you know, PRs are a place you visit, not live. And I just mentioned about not having enough stress. So for some people, that 55, 60% may not do anything for. It doesn't mean that it's not important, but you have to really understand your numbers. And then those 70 to 80 and 80 to 90, that's the sweet spot for strength training. That is, if you look at the average sort of load over time, that is where the work is done. And then the 90% is, again, is that place that you visit. So when you're looking at this chart, the first thing I want you to almost think of is that where is the sweet spot? And for Gen Pop, I would argue it's right in those 70 to 80, 80 to 90 percentages, right, Brett?
Yeah. With maybe a sweet spot of 75 to 85, in splitting those percentages just a little bit finer, to hit in between there. And there's a couple other things that I want to kind of highlight and pull out of there. So classic US powerlifting, linear cycle, you're starting with a lower percentage of your 1RM, let's call it 65%, 70%. You're going to do a higher volume of work there. And if you look at Prolopin's chart and looking at the optimal range there of 24 reps, but a range of 18 to 30, you're definitely pushing that 30 rep or more range at that lower percentage. So we are high volume, low intensity. Then over a series of weeks, we bump the intensity and decrease the volume until we're very high intensity, low volume. That is where we have coupled intensity and volume, and it is an inverse relationship, right? So as our intensity level goes down, our volume goes up. As our intensity level goes up, our volume goes down. So those are always inverse to one another. So you'll start that linear routine with, you know, a pretty high volume of work, but it's light. And the thing I want to highlight there is look at the reps and sets. You're doing three reps for six sets. It's not three sets of 15 to get your volume. You're still doing lower rep sets and accumulating volume. I'm thinking of the 6x4 study that I'm a huge fan of right now, where you're taking six sets of four at about 70%, 80% 1RM. And that's something that you should arguably be able to get 8 or so reps with. And you're doing half of that, a set every 2 minutes instead of resting longer. And you get a lot of really good practice out of that. It's a really good routine, but it almost, you know, it sits right around that, close to that optimal range for around that 80% work. So, and according to Prolopin's chart, so it's pretty interesting. So look at your reps and sets, look at what's optimal, look at total range. That's going to give you more guidance, right? And you can tell this was done by Prolopin's chart as Russian because it's reps/sets. Americans think sets, reps, you know, three sets of 10, five sets of five. That's why five sets of five works for everybody around the world. Three sets of three and five sets of five are universal. You're going to be doing the same thing no matter who wrote it. But as soon as you say six sets of four, a Russian's going to flip that and say, we're doing four reps for six sets. So you got to know who you're talking about there. But I think that optimal range and looking at the reps and sets and looking at how that's put together gives you a lot of guidance as to how you're going to do this over time in working that inverse relationship from low intensity, high volume to high intensity, low volume.
Yeah. And here's the beauty of that. If you look at the range, right. And again, we have the optimal idea, and Brett, you were talking about the first one, 55 to 65% optimal range is 24 repetitions total. Right. So again, 6x4, you know, point is with the optimal range, right. It is a range. So if you are starting the first 4 weeks of your program at the bottom of the optimal range, and I'm talking repetition range, all right, repetition range, the next month should kind of be the same. It should be at the bottom of the rep range, in the bottom of the rep range. What you don't want to do is you don't want to start a program at the bottom of the repetition range for the first month and then at the very, very top end in the next month of the rep range, because then you're going to have an issue, because what's going to happen is, yes, the percentage of weight that you're going to lift is going to increase, but so is the volume at the same time. And that can get pretty screwy. So just make sure that, you know, if you are looking at that chart, right, if you look at that Prolipin's chart, just make sure that you see descending numbers, right? So if we were to think of it very, very simply, you know, for if a 12-week program, you know, 12 weeks, we could do, let's see, I'm trying to think 18-ish. So we could do 6x3. Yeah, we could do 6x3. That would get us our 18. And then we could do our 4x3 for the next month. And then we could do our 3x3 for the next month. And that's not a bad little program, right? Just a very, very basic program. But just make sure that, again, when you're starting at the bottom of the range, at the beginning of a program, your reps stay towards the bottom of the range for the duration, and you're not bouncing between the bottom and the top, because that's when you're going to get screwy.
Yeah. I mean, I think we love to jump ahead of ourselves. You know, if a little bit of volume is good, well, then a lot of volume is even better. And if some high intensity is good, then all high intensity must be good. And even what you see here within Prolipin's chart is that 90%+. The ideal reps, 1. Sets, 2. Optimal number of reps, 4. Total range, 10. So you might, and if you accumulated 10, and remember who we're talking about here as far as the way the chart was designed, elite Olympic weightlifters lifting 90%+ of their 1RM for 10 total reps in a session. Wow. That's a rough session. That is a lot of work. So, but 2x2. And if you look at a lot of classic American powerlifting cycles, you end up doing a 2x2 at the top end. And that was even with the Russian squat routine, which I did twice for my deadlift, not the gentle way it's put out there now. I was doing 3 days a week for 6 weeks, building to a 60% or 80% of my 1RM for 6 sets of 6 before you started to taper, and you ended up pulling your previous max for 2 sets of 2 before you went into your peak, for before you went into the test. So it was even that gels a lot with what we're going to do within Prolipin's chart. So the mistake people make, and this is back to what you said, what I've told people, what I have to remind myself of on an ongoing basis, there's places you visit and there's places you live. 90%+ is a place you visit. If you start living at 90%+, you will step off that peak, and it's not going to be a gentle step. You're going to fall off the side of the mountain. So I think if you were looking for to begin to understand strength training and linear periodization, if you just ran Prolipin's chart, just like you said, start with, 6 sets of 3, 4x3, 3 or 5x3, 4x3. And now I'm in my brain, I keep flipping Russian and American.
Well, but to be honest though, at the end of the day though, right, if you kind of look at it, if you just look at the math, if we step back, because I know you're kind of saying sets and reps, but if you even look at it this way, right, 6x3 is a very strength oriented based program. It's still going to get you 24 reps. 3x8 will get you 24 reps as well. And if you start a program at 3x8 and do that for 3 weeks, and then move to 3x5 or 3x6 and do that for 2 to 3 weeks, and then, you know, go down to whatever it is, you're still simply following the same rules. It's just jumbled up differently. And I think, I mean, yes, because this is definitely biased towards strength, but if you still use the idea of those overall numbers and the sort of the breaks from sets and reps, you can use this idea of high to low with higher volumes and still use similar total ranges as well. It doesn't necessarily mean you only have to do it that way. It's just, it's a great strength template for sure.
It is. And so if we're talking, and that's what I keep coming back to, that 6x4 study, six sets of four with a 2 minute rest. And what they contrasted that with was exactly what you talked about, three sets of eight with an even longer rest. They were resting upwards of 5 minutes between sets. And, you know, we tend to advocate, you know, longer rest periods of 3 to 5 minutes. The 6x4, because they were operating at what would technically be like half the RM, they were able to accrue the same volume in with greater density and get better recovery and better results. And that lines up with a lot of velocity-based research, where as you start to go out of that 4 to 6 rep range and you start to push into these time frames under load and at certain percentages, where you start to accrue metabolic and neurological fatigue, you drastically change what your recovery is from those sessions. There's some great velocity-based research where, you know, they were pushing into that sets of 8 to 10, where they started to see velocity drop off versus stopping at sets of 4. And the recovery, like the people that were stopping at sets of 4 and still had plenty of gas in the tank for velocity and how they were performing the lift, they're recovered within 24 hours, ready to train again. The people that were pushing into the sets of 8 and looking at the velocity drop, it was 72 hours before they were recovered, ready to train again. So, you know, pick your battles. I know which one, especially being, you know, a 52-year-old with a little mileage, I know which one I'm picking. I'm gonna pick the one that optimizes my recovery and gives me the best shot to maintain velocity and quality. So Prilipin's chart, even though it's a guideline, we apply it towards powerlifting, originally meant for Olympic lifting. There's still a lot that we can mine out of this.
100%. And, you know, I was working with our staff the other day, and I had this conversation with them about, you know, sort of the set and rep ranges. And we just ran through some programs on the whiteboard. And then we talked about why we thought it would be good. And it was really just us brainstorming, because a lot of people say it has to be done a certain way. And is, in my opinion, as long as you're following the principles of strength training, progressive overload, stress and adaptation, supercompensation, you're doing it right. I know some people that do really, really well with heavy doubles. I know some people that do not. It really depends. So point being is, you can't force stuff down people's throats when it comes to, you know, what you think is going to be best for them, because you should really try to determine what is going to be the best for them. But just a quick note on this stuff, guys. And Brett was talking about velocity-based training. If you are implementing velocity-based training and percentages, again, you should have a training background. This is, if you're a newbie, don't waste your time and money on that stuff, because anything will work for a while. So, you know, we've got all this tech where we can measure everything on our phones, but it honestly, I think your best bet is just going to be, you know, hit the weights consistently for a year, and you're going to learn a lot about stress adaptation, how your body responds to programming, volume, load. I mean, essentially it's a science experiment on yourself, right? But you have to be willing to pay attention to see what works for you and what does not, because maybe what used to work for you doesn't anymore, just due to the accumulated mileage or anything else that you may be sort of going on. But, you know, I think we gotta, in a world of like social media right now and all this crap out there when it comes to strength training and just the rubbish out there, we need to go back to the basics of science. And this is really it when it comes to, you know, strength training. This is basic stress and adaptation 101.
Yeah. And as Pavel will point out, there are two different models of stress and adaptation. One of them is pathological. One of them is more performance based. So if you're quoting Hans Seil and you're going with the GAS model of general adaptation syndrome, that's a pathological model. That might not be, you know, the best guide for performance based work. And I want to pull in RPE here real quick, because I think it ties together a lot of what we're talking about from stress adaptation and making sure it's right for the individual. One of the primary strong first stop signs is exceeding an RPE of 8. Problem is, as soon as you tell somebody we're doing a rep max or we're going for a 1 RM, and now 1 RM, maybe we know we're going to be exceeding the 8 RPE of 8. But for all other instances, we don't want to exceed the RPE of 8. Because if you exceed an RPE of 8, I can tell you your rep speed is probably down, your tempo has probably changed, and now we're on the wrong side of the stop signs. And now when you take that, when you push that RPE of 9 or 10, when you're doing that, let's say we were doing that 8RM testing to see where we wanted to, 80% 1RM testing, see where we wanted to put your percentages. Well, if you're pushing to a 9 or 10 when you do that rep max test, and we know your tempo changed and your rep speed changed, well, we're not working with good information. That's going to be, we're going to have you at too difficult a starting point. And so Fabio likes to refer to it as a technical rep max or a TRM. And it keeps that little note in the back of your head that as soon as I see a change in quality of the execution, the tempo, the rep speed, if I'm exceeding that RP of 8, I'm testing something different. And that's not the, those aren't the numbers that I want to use to set the foundation for that coming program. So, and that ties in with that staying below that RP of 8 or not exceeding the RP of 8, and keeping the rep speed consistent, keeping the tempo consistent. That's where you're going to optimize the neurological metabolic adaptations, and you're going to get better recovery and better work out of your training. It's just, it can be a really hard mindset thing to get people not to push into that 9-10 RPE on a consistent basis. And I'm at a certain point, I don't know how to help you.
Yeah.
Like if you can't stop doing that, like that might be more of a counseling situation. But like there's something going on there that you're trying to push too hard. You can actually back down a little bit and get way better recovery, way better results. And so that ties in with that, you know, the adaptation that we're looking for and recovery that we're looking for. If you're constantly trying to figure out how to recover from your training, run your training through Prilipin's chart for your strength training work. Look at your RPEs. And if you're doing a rep max test and you're pushing to an RM of 10, or you know, an RPE of 10 on a rep max, okay, that might be great, but that's not the number I want to use to program you with, because I know your tempo changed, your rep speed changed, like the quality things that I'm looking for have changed. So that plays in. So if you're constantly running RM testing and then overloading yourself in your training, you're probably exceeding the 8 on the RPE.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, for the coaches out there who enjoy programming, a lot of the programming that I've done and had success with is just by trial and error and using these principles, whether it's, you know, stuff from, you know, this or from Strong First, or some of the stuff from Joe Jameson, or I mean, there's so much information out there, but you're going to see a lot of similarities. And that's what I want you to think about when it comes time to start designing protocols and programs is, you know, when you're looking at the best in the world in the science, what are the similarities of the programs? What are the trends in the data all pointing towards? I don't think you have to take things verbatim per se, because a lot of that stuff was done in isolation with athletes in a very, very controlled setting. And that is just not reality anymore. So, but, you know, I will say this, having the opportunity to brainstorm and write out some cycles is something that is an art and a science. And I remember, and I don't know if this was the first SFL, Brett, but it might've been, was it the first SFL in Phoenix at Danny's place?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so I think that's when Pavel beat us all up after with swings because someone was talking or late for lunch or something. Anyways, it might have been the inaugural SFL, but it was out in Danny's place, and we went through it. Pavel taught a lot of it, and I still remember him going up on the whiteboard and doing maybe 2 to 3 just like linear cycles, very, very basic linear cycling. Very similar to what you'd see on Prilipin's chart, and just like brainstorming with people. And all right, you know, you started off too aggressive with this, and if you run all the numbers, it's not going to work, or you didn't start off aggressive enough, and look at where you're going to land. So I think going back and forth and just going on a whiteboard and writing out algorithms and just messing around is something that I think will help you become a better coach. And then implementing those programs with your clients, right? Like it should make sense when you're looking at it. So that's something that I still look at is like, wow, like that exercise of going on a whiteboard and just brainstorming, setting rep schemes that follow these principles was how I really got a lot. I experienced a lot more improvement in my ability to program.
Well, I mean, you gotta do it.
You gotta do it and execute it and see if it worked.
There's two pieces to that. There's the theoretical, right? And that's the, you know, let's write a program and see what we can come up with. Then there's the application of that program. And so for the coaches programming for their students, ideally you've done the program and you've done the math on the program. Because there are some programs out there that when you actually look under the hood and you look at what's happening, there was a major certifying body that put out a program that when you ran the numbers on it and you did it by their tempo, concentric, pause, eccentric, rest between sets, reps per set, blah, 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 blah. When you actually did it, it was 3.5 hours of lunges and it was about 400 lunges in a session. So whoever wrote that program didn't do the math. And then coming back to Prolepin's chart, like if you put together a program for somebody and you're working at 70%, but you've got them doing 50 reps, go back to Prolepin's chart and see where that fits within those ranges. Now you might be working with a unicorn and a volume of 50 reps works. You might not be. You might want to take a look at that. So, you know,
imagine you're not.
Exactly.
You're not.
Let's just say you're not.
You'll know when you see it. Often verified.
Yes. Kind of like Bigfoot. But I think that there's some really valuable experimentation. And if you don't want to experiment, cool. A lot of people have written a lot of programs. And you can easily go find a nice linear Marty Gallagher whoever you want to pick. You can go find some really easy to follow linear cycles and cut your teeth on them and see what you would do with it and see how it worked for you. I'd get reload. I'd look at how Fabio and Pablo look at programming, and I would look at that 80% 1RM testing as a more of a guideline. And, you know, there's a lot of information out there on this. And, but you can usually come back, look at Prolepin's chart and say, oh, I kind of see where they're headed with this and why they made this decision or that decision until you're planning for Plan Strong. And then we throw out the idea that intensity and volume are coupled and inverse, and we uncouple them and we make them not coupled, so we can have high volume, high intensity, low volume, low intensity, and every permutation in between, but we're still only spending less than 10% of our total volume at 90 plus. So even within an uncoupled crazy situation like Plan Strong and Built Strong, we're still only spending less than 10% of our total volume at 90 plus percent. Above 92.5%, if we want to get really technical, which also lines up with Prolepin's chart. So even at that very high end, there is a definitive cap on how long we want to be there and what we're trying to do there. And I would argue that most people don't understand that cap and they're just doing too much at 90 plus percent.
Yeah. And, you know, just because you can get away with something for a while doesn't mean it's the right thing to do or it's going to continue to go that way. So I think you got to be smart about your ability to hammer that gas pedal.
Survivorship bias, man.
That's
survivorship
it.
Bias. Yeah, that's it. Nothing bad happened this time, so it must be okay.
It must be good. All right, man. Well, another one in the books. Guys, thank you so much for listening. We truly appreciate it. Look, give us some reviews if you listen to us. Just to throw us a bone here because, you know, the money's the sponsorships are drying out. No, I'm just messing with you. But honestly, if you guys enjoyed the podcast, just leave us a positive review. And guys, we will see you on the next episode.
Hey, everybody. Coach Mike here. thank you so much for your support. We truly appreciate it. If you could do us a huge favor, please give us a positive review on whatever platform you're listening to. And also, please share this with your friends, colleagues, teammates, and fitness enthusiasts. Thank you again for supporting the Minimum Effective Dose podcast.